Chapter 38, Solstice Feast. The halls of Solaran Estate felt different as Brannis walked along its corridors. He had not long been Grand Marshal of the Imperial Army when last he had been in his family's ancestral home. Now the servants who hurried about seemed more deferential. His relatives seemed to notice his presence and grant him acknowledgement when he passed them in the halls. He had not realized just how diminished he had been in their eyes until he had finally earned a position worthy of their respect. The torrent of activity was due to preparations for the solstice celebration. Elsewhere in the Empire, solstice had been observed days ago, but Brannis had just arrived back from Rainsdark the night before, having stayed long enough to ensure the orderly progress of the city's repairs. Initially, he had not intended to stay long after the victory over the goblin forces, but Duke Peloton's assassination had thrust him into the forefront of the recovery planning. 2 nights after the Hero's Feast, as it was being called, the Duke had been found dead in his quarters with a goblin dagger in his chest. A search had been launched to find and capture, or kill, the second goblin assassin to have infiltrated the castle. But the skill of the second assassin was greater than that of the first. Either that, or the second assassin had just chosen his victim more carefully and not tried to kill everyone in the guest wing, as had seemed to be the plan of the one Juliana had caught and killed. After the Duke's death, his elder son Harwell had inherited the title of Duke of Rainsdark. With the assassin undiscovered, he was a wreck of nerves and little use to his people. Brannis had taken over the day-to-day operations of the city with Minon's help and arranged for the repairs to be made to the walls and other damaged parts of the city. The tradesmen of Rainsdark numbered few stonemasons among their brethren, given that the city was thousands of summers old and was maintained by wards, not manual labor. Little had needed to be repaired or built within the lifetime of anyone in the Empire, so the skill was limited to those who had immigrated from less ancient and warded parts of the Empire, and those who had learned to practice new trades while in the city. Brannis had arranged for Minon to contact the stone folk. Living for centuries as neighbors since their mutual excavations had run together, neither the folk of Rainsdark nor the stone folk had seemed interested in engaging in close contact, other than occasional trade in dire times. Brannis considered the times sufficiently dire to engage with the folk again. The stone folk proved to be tough negotiators, but straightforward in their manner. They were wide, stocky people, hairless and covered in thick, hard skin that lent them the name Cadrans called them. They spoke their own tongue, but it was based on the rune language, and in written form Brannis could communicate enough to arrange with them what he needed. The stone folk were all stonemasons in the manner that all humans are cooks. Not all were expert in the working of stone, but all could manage to some degree, and they had among their numbers those whose work was artistry itself. The cost of all the repairs the city needed was to be a majority share of the materials that had been gathered from Jadefire's corpse. Brannis found it appropriate that the beast whose predations cost the city so much would be the source of their payment for rebuilding, with plenty still to spare for the Empire's own use. Rashan had claimed choice bits of the creature for his own personal use, namely fangs and claws, along with a selection of choice scales from among the smallish ones near the joints. The rest he had allowed Brannis to allocate as he saw fit, and Brannis had traded much of it away. The stone folk had no interest in the flesh, but coveted the bones and scales for their armor. Brannis knew not of the conflicts among the races that dwelt deep beneath the ground, but the stone folk were reputed to be fabulous armorers and weaponsmiths, scoffing at Brannis's warnings about the difficulty of working the dragon bits and their resistance to fire. As for that dragon flesh, men who had eaten it had largely grown sick. Raw meat sits well in few human stomachs, but those who braved the delicacy and kept it down saw certain benefits. In the several days Brannis had kept in the city, he had seen many a soldier impressing folk by holding his hand over a flame with no ill effect. After such displays, a small group devoted themselves to consuming as much of the dragon meat as they could stomach, for as long as it lasted. Brannis knew not what to make of that particular group of culinary adventurers, but he wished them all the best and left them to their curious choice of foods. Brannis had felt no different for his meal of dragon and wanted no part in more of it. There you are. I looked over half the estate to find you, Brannis commented, spying Iridan in one of the balconies overlooking the lake. The young warlock in training was staring out at the water. He did not turn to look at Brannis when he heard him call out. I was not hiding, if that is what you were driving at, Iridan replied. I just came out here for the quiet. I always took solstice as a quiet holiday, with no feasting. What is going on inside there is madness. It does not sound like you are finding peace out here either. I can go, Brannis said, and then turned to leave Iridan to his solitude. How do you deal with her? Iridan asked, finally turning toward Brannis. Aha, the real reason he is out here alone, thought Brannis. Everything I say to her comes out wrong, and it never passes without comment. It does not matter if there are others about. She takes every chance to diminish my dignity. Well, first off, do not blame yourself for whatever you say. She is good at twisting words and ascribing double meanings where none were meant. She knows what you mean as well as you do, so do not let her fool you into thinking you have offended her. There is very little that I have found that truly offends her. And if she persists in harassing you, I just might let you in on what a few of those are. It would be cruel, but on occasion, she has to be reminded that she often is as well. I honestly think that at times she forgets that, Brannis said. It felt odd putting Juliana's person into so few words. She was complicated, and even Brannis only understood her partially. She often cried at night, or at least did when she was younger, and would angrily deny having done so if it were ever mentioned. Brannis thought he knew her as well as anyone, but it still did not explain the half of her. She was outwardly aggressive and confident, but he had glimpsed beyond the facade a few times. Iridan would too, in time, he was sure. She's taken me into her bed twice now, Iridan confided, his tone and sudden lack of eye contact making his embarrassment obvious. And when she lies atop me, I cannot help to think back to when she would beat me up as a boy. She looks the same now as then, at least in the face. I know it is foolish, but... It is foolish. That was almost 15 winters ago. You were a grown man now, and she is a grown woman. She could not beat you now if she tried. Brannis tried to sound convincing, even if he would not have laid good odds to anyone betting against Iridan in such a fight. Besides, Rashan sees a warlock when he looks at you. Maybe you should start seeing one as well. And not remembering a time when you were the weaker one. Well, maybe, but... She is your problem now. Learn how to deal with her, Brannis advised. I cannot be there to protect you from her anymore. Brannis continued on his departure, leaving Iridan to ponder what to do about his future wife. Brannis could not bear any longer to talk with Iridan about Juliana. She is your problem now. She has been my problem for a long time, so it is about time someone else had to deal with her. Brannis could not help Iridan in good faith, since he still held on to the remote hope that Juliana would still be his. He just did not know how. Somehow he thought that if he suggested they both abandon their lives in the Empire and run off together, she would agree. I am Grand Marshal of the Imperial Army. I am favored by the warlock. Would I really give all that away just to be with her? Brannis found himself greedy. He wanted to have her and all the benefits of his rank and station as well. The decision might not have been as simple as that either. The warlock was unlikely to be kind in the face of not only his desertion, but also his interference in his son's betrothal. The trip back from Rainsdark had been filled with temptation as well. He well understood that Celia had been sent to him to divert him from his interest in Juliana, but he had found himself drawn to her regardless. There was a familiarity about her that Kyrus had felt with Abelay. She was unpretentious, witty, and easy to talk to. She even looked enough like Abelay that he found himself lusting after her, perhaps on Kyrus's behalf. He had objected when Roshan had suggested inviting her to the solstice celebration with the Soloran household. Brannis had won a tilt against the warlock when he said he thought it ought to be just family present, which would mean that Juliana would not be invited either. It would give him time with his family and relieve him from the headache of having the two most life-complicating women he knew present at once. Even in the brief time they had both been around, Brannis could not help but notice the enmity between the two, or rather, the enmity that Juliana bore Celia. By early afternoon, the festivities began outdoors at Soloran Estate. Two games of Yalter had begun on the grounds, one for the children and one for the adults. Since solstice was an event for the household, and not just the family, both games were being played family versus the help. While the kitchen staff was occupied with preparing the evening feast, there were stable hands, porters, gardeners, stewards, and advisors, as well as their own families, all eligible to play. Upon the great stone terrace of the manor house sat many of the elder members of the household and the women who felt the game too rough for their sensibilities. They drank warmed cider and watched those at play, commenting amongst themselves upon the game or holding discussions unrelated. The common folk kept their own gathering just outside the roped-off fields of play and were much more exuberant in their attention to the games. Many looked forward to the Yalter games at solstice, and the delay for Brannis's return only increased their hunger for the event. Brannis had always enjoyed the game. His family was generally outmatched by their servants in the adult games, and he had been playing amongst the elders since he was 14, trying to even the match in the Soloran's favor. The older a sorcerer grew, the greater the temptation to leave physical tasks to others, or just use magic to complete them. With the strict ban on magic in the friendly games of Yalter, this left the laborers of the estate in greater position. A sorcerer in his 40th summer might still retain much of the vigor of youth, but not so much as a lad of 20 who wrangled horses all day, or a courier whose days were naught but rushing about carrying missives. Brannis arrived late to the game and found his family already hard-pressed. He considered seating himself among the elders and relaxing to watch the game, thinking that finally Yalter might be beneath his station. When the players caught sight of him, though, he was quickly disabused of that notion.
"Brannis, there you are! Get over here now!" his sister Aloysia shouted from the playing field. "This is getting embarrassing!"
Aloysia was 8 summers his senior and recently appointed to the inner circle, and yet she was out on the Yalter field, running and sweating among the commoners and his other relatives. Brannis was thankfully unarmored, safe as he was in his family's own home. But he carried Avalanche at his hip out of long habit of having a blade wherever he went. He unbuckled his sword belt and left it on the terrace, then ran off to join the game. "I forget at times how young he is," Roshan commented quietly to Axtarion, who sat beside him watching the children's game. He had been pleased to learn that the old man was still alive, though he had been in his 40s when Roshan had left the Empire. He had thought at the time he killed Gravis Archon that the last living person who remembered him from his early days had died.
"Humph, you look younger still. Looks lie. You are no more an unblooded lad than you look, and Brannis is no more a boy than he looks. Thinks too much to be a knight, if you ask me. Broods. Not so much as that boy of yours, though. No, that one thinks the world watches him and is shamed by it."
Axtarion was in a lucid mood and liked having someone older than him around. Though by rights he could have claimed the head position in the household, Roshan had left the honor to Axtarion, deferring to him in matters of family. It seemed only fitting, since Axtarion knew them all from babes, and Roshan had only recently met most of them. "He will grow out of that. He has been looked down on for too long. I shall just have to show him the sort of power he really possesses," Roshan said. The warlock took a sip of the cider and remembered days that had passed centuries ago. Tradition meant more to those who had more remote times to remember. Roshan had sat upon the same terrace during the reign of Escalon IV, and had drunk cider that tasted much the same as that which he held in his hand.
You do not even see him playing at Yalter. Boy his age ought to enjoy his vigor while he has it. Too young to be getting caught up in this warlock business,
Axtarion said. He was good at complaining. One of the few benefits he saw of his extreme old age was that he could complain about nearly anything with authority. I was warlock much younger than him, Rashaan observed, grinning at his great nephew Axtarion.
Bah, and look what that got you. Off to war before you knew a woman. Caught up in bloodthirst and plots of war. Made enemies of well near everyone but the emperors and a few apprentices. You even left a grand mess to clean up when you ran off after the dead earth,
Axtarion ranted, growing crotchety and loud as he went.
That is not how... I was not done. You got much too power and responsibility at a young age, and got arrogant for it. It turned you into a liar, a warmonger, and a bully. You thought you were the best at everything, and you were not.
Wait a moment.
No, I think I will not wait. You turned the Kadrin Empire into a pariah among all the nations of Coria. Folk would not trade with us, and our folk would turn up dead when they traveled widely. Spent a good many winters trying to prevent them allying together to come crush us after you disappeared. You may have been a good general, but you were a lousy diplomat, a bad father, and a worse author.
Axtarion humrumped. The old man was breathing heavily after his tirade, and many of the family were surreptitiously listening in to hear the warlock torn down a bit by someone who had little to fear from retribution. Are you quite finished? Rashaan asked.
I think so, yes. Been meaning to yell at you since I heard you were back. First good chance I got. Colossally large mess of yours I had to clear up.
Axtarion replied civilly. The fire had gone out of him after he had given his grievances a proper airing. I understand the rest, but what was that about being a bad author? Rashaan suspected he had just discovered a key piece of a puzzle he had been curious about, since he had found that his room at the palace had been violated. The old man paused for a moment before answering, as a cheer went up from the Yalter field. Someone had just scored for the servants. It seemed that Brannis's presence was not enough on its own to swing the balance to the family's favor.
That book of prophecy you wrote, pure drivel. Glad you only gave it the one go and stuck with...
It was you that broke into my room,
Rashaan said. He did not sound quite angry, but had rather just found the answer to a question that had dogged him since learning of the book's disappearance.
Well, yes. You were thought dead. I was your replacement as High Sorcerer, and I felt it my duty to get into your quarters and see if anything was amiss,
Axtarion stated.
You always had an overblown opinion of your rune-carving skills. Those wards were good, but I was better.
How did you break through? I found nothing amiss after a century away when I checked on them. Rashaan was more curious than angry. The old man was entitled to his bragging if he had truly been the one to break into his quarters. Gravis Archon had seemed to think it an impossible task.
I set up wards all around it, on floors above and below even, diverting ether away from the area. Your ward relied on having a draw of its own. I denied it ether until it weakened and broke it,
Axtarion said.
Then after making a search of the room, I took your book of prophecy and sealed it back up. That ward you saw was my copy of yours.
A row erupted on the children's field, as one of the Solaran children was caught using magic on the field of play. Axtarion did not have to look to know that it was Danilasis that was at fault. The boy was too full of his own skills to abide by the simplest of rules. Being among the youngest of the players allowed onto the field, he was too immature to cope with being physically outmatched. He was too short to pass the Yalt over his opponent's heads, and his hands were too small to catch it well. He had settled for spending his time chasing after it, and had now started sneaking spells in to disrupt the servants' children. He was being escorted from the field by his father Caladrus, who was overseeing the children's game.
Of all the treasures in that room,
all you took was that worthless book? Rashaan was incredulous. After all that work, you found nothing else to your liking?
I had no designs of becoming the next warlock. I had no need of your finery or that sword of yours that Brannis now carries.
The old sorcerer nodded in the direction of where Brannis had left Avalanche to go play Yalter.
I wanted something distinctive, such that anyone who challenged me could see that I had really been inside. But alas, no one but you ever seemed interested.
So where is it? What have you done with it? That sort of thing is dangerous in the wrong hands, Rashaan said. But Axterion waved away his concerns.
I taught out of it at the academy for a time, but I have kept it in the family library ever since.
You taught from it? You old fool, what kind of troubles have you caused with that nonsense? Rashaan seemed genuinely annoyed with the old man.
Pshaw, I taught from it, surely. I did not represent what you had written as true prophecy, though. I do not believe there is ether strong enough to pierce the mists of time, but I see the benefits of crafting prophecy to manipulate events. Many prophecies have altered the course of events, but for the knowing of them, not because some pompous fool actually saw it coming. Knowledge of the future, even false knowledge, no, especially false knowledge, is powerful stuff, the wily old sorcerer said. Your book was a good example of bland, generic prophecy, written with no talent for it. I used it as an example of prophecy written to sow discord rather than actually predict anything.
The others say that your wits are failing you in your dotage, Axterion.
I begin to suspect you have them all fooled, Rashaan said, and Axterion just smiled. So you've not tried to act on any of the prophecies written within? There is one in particular I would worry to have in general knowledge.
The one about the Empire being consumed in fire in, about 70 winters from now? Axterion asked.
Rashaan had written that one after a particularly bad day, promising volcanoes and wildfires consuming the Empire in a great blaze from which none would escape.
No, not that one. There was another, about a monster in the form of a sorcerer.
Rashaan did not wish to relate the rest of it with the others possibly around to hear.
Oh, that one. Boring. Never had much use for it. Worried folk might think you predicted your own impersonator, demon?
Axterion hinted.
I would give you more credit than you deserve if you had actually managed that trick. If a demon in your form was undone and discovered by this prophecy of yours, it would be the first use of it I have ever found. You are too much of Rashaan Solaran to be an impostor.
Another cheer went up from the Yalter field, as the Solarans had scored. With the early twilight approaching, the game would be ending soon, and the Solarans had barely scored all match. Iridan decided to join in for a while, but had wearied of it quickly, and excused himself with a vaguely explained injury. I should like the book back in any event, Rashaan told the sorcerer. Axterion shrugged by way of reply.
Very well. It is yours after all, I suppose. I shall fetch it this evening.
Good. The less people see of prophecy, the better I shall like it.
Rashaan did not state it, but there were other things within those pages that he did not want seen or spoken about. They had been the idle ramblings of his poorest moods, but many of the prophecies had laid bare secret fears and fearful secrets. Of all in the Empire, he most feared Brannis reading what lay within its pages. The boy was too clever by far. Prophecy or no, there was knowledge to be gleaned from those pages, more than Rashaan had even realized at the time he wrote them. He would feel safer once he had it safely back in his possession. The feast had been festive enough, but Brannis's thoughts were elsewhere. As he retired to his rooms, he did not intend to sleep. He had been to the libraries of the Tower of Contemplation on his way back home, and had selected a number of volumes to take back with him for study. War with Magrin was a foregone conclusion. Despite the devastation visited upon the Goblin army, the Magrin had lost nothing in the assault, and had gained for themselves the staff of Galen. It was an object so old that none Brannis had spoken to had any idea of its powers, save for how it had been used in Rainsdark to keep the volcano dormant. While the winter cold brought Kadrin time, Magrin would be certain to begin a campaign against them when the weather warmed.
With much of their cavalry comprising exotic beasts purchased from across the northern seas,
they fought best in hotter climates. It was not an ideal composition for an army, but Magrin was playing to their strength as great traders and buying what they could not scavenge from their resource-poor lands. With less magical strength than Kadrin, at least for a period stretching from mid-springtime to early autumn, they would have the advantage in strength of arms. But Brannis would have time to devise strategies against the Magrin before the season turned. Winter had not even begun in earnest to sink its icy talons into Kadrus, and the whole of winter would pass before any serious threat from Magrin could be mounted. Kyrus, on the other hand, could use his help much more immediately. While his twin was stranded on a remote island, he seemed to be in little actual danger. Still, Brannis felt he owed much to his counterpart, both for the help he had been against Jinzan Fair and for the richness he added to the sleeping portion of his life. In a strange and mildly uncomfortable way, he yearned for Abelay as well and wanted to see Kyrus return to her. And so, for Kyrus, he read. Ethereal Navigation was a treatise on the use of the ether as a means of finding one's way over long distances. The greatest of Ptak's works explained how to form permanent structures out of materials at hand, with particular emphasis on how to build them to last. Spirit magic was of questionable use, but it explored the view of ether as a spiritual medium and many of the beliefs that sprung from that view. The one that Brannis felt held the most promise was To Anywhere, a volume that held the transference spell that Roshan had used to cross half of Koraya to reach Rainsdark. With any luck, Kyrus would be able to use it one day to return home. The spell was much more complex than any Kyrus had learned previously, and there were many warnings of the dire consequences of mistakes in its use, but it seemed the best option. Brannis settled into his bed with a stack of borrowed books at his bedside table. No fear, Kyrus. I will find a way to rescue you, or at least to find you a way to rescue yourself.